here we are at the start of another week on this show. This hour, we're going to take in a lot of different directions and introduce you to a wonderful man, voiceover king, who had a close relationship with the oldest living man, oldest living vet from World War II, who just recently died at the age of 105, almost made it to 106, Doc Brown. I mean, this guy was unbelievable. He was part of the Bataan Death March, if you remember. And what a survivor and a thriver. Somebody told him when he was in his 40s that he probably wouldn't even make it to 50 because of everything that had happened to him in the labor camp, in that Japanese labor camp, and so on and so forth. But in fact, that wasn't the case at all. And Don Morrow shares a lot of stories with him, about him rather, and has written a book about him. So that's coming up here at the bottom of this hour. Plus, we'll talk about a couple of other things that happened to Morrow in his life. Cut like 20,000 commercials plus. Can you imagine? If you remember the Shell Answer Man, he was that guy. If you remember seeing all the, just, it seemed like we were bombarded all over the place, but the Titanic commercials, he was the voice on those commercials. All right, looking for a voice. All these politicians are trying to do that, especially on the Republican side, because they definitely want the nomination. When I say they, there's a ton of them. Rick Santorum still wants him, still wants to be the guy. Also, Newt Gingrich really still wants to be the guy. You can look at Mitt Romney. You know he wants to be the guy. He's doing it the second time around. Michelle Bachmann thinks she has a real shot at it. Herman Cain, with his business background, feels like he could get some of the backing. And the list goes on because there's others who still haven't thrown in. One guy over the weekend who said, yeah, I'm going to step up and I'm going to run for prez, was the longtime governor of Texas, Rick Perry. And he's always asked about one thing in particular. He's asked a lot about the former friend, or current friend, and former president, George W. Bush. And here's Perry on that.
George Bush is not my opponent. George Bush is not, he's a former president, and we give him all the respect for that.
Right.
We're talking about how you create jobs.
Yeah, he's not going to do the dance on Bush and what Bush did and what the administration did and is it their fault and all that stuff. He's going to dance around that. Okay, the other thing that he was asked about, the other thing that he was talking about, of course, military service.
Military men and women respect the commander-in-chief regardless of who it is. I think they really like to see a person who's worn the uniform in that office. And, you know, I think that's just a true statement. And I wouldn't back up off of it an inch.
Yeah, see, that's interesting because that does come up. He's absolutely right about that. That comes up a lot for a lot of the candidates who haven't been in that position. That's why McCain was thought to be so strong, remember, when all of a sudden, last time around for the Republicans, he was the guy who was running out of money, and then all of a sudden it was McCain, and you can't dispute McCain's record, and you can't dispute the fact that he was in a POW camp for, you know, 5 years, and really what he endured and how he served the United States going back to his NOM service. And often the military record or the lack of the military record comes up sometimes to bite a candidate. So checking records and feeling the new guy out is usually what happens, and that's the dance that Rick Perry is doing at this point. And to be certain, especially with the amount of attention and the electronic media and social media and everything else that we have, if there's anything there, poof, it comes out. Ask Michelle Bachmann, ask any of the candidates. You know, that's how we play the game of electing somebody now. There's massive attention, massive combing through, backgrounds, even though there always has been. It's just a quick, there's just quicker ways to pump it out. So while the Republicans, like Perry, and trying to find his footing, they're trying to do that, I think, all of them. The president is attacking the Republicans as he's on a bus tour in the Midwest. He was in Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois is all part of the stops. And on the bus tour, he's talking about partisan politics and how divisive it's been. He's talking about the Republicans and the field and saying that it's ridiculous how they're blanketing any opposition. You know, they just throw it out there to any kind of compromise involving new taxes, saying that it's just common sense. He told a crowd that at a town hall meeting, he was in Cannon Falls, Minnesota, and it's Minnesota, Iowa, like I said, and Illinois. He said you have to be willing to compromise to move the country forward. So really, that's what Obama was pushing back on. He had to defend his own record because he was asked about the compromises he made with the Republicans. And the one thing that he did say that I caught him saying that was interesting, he said, I make no apologies for being reasonable. And it was the perfect photo op, too, because he was in front of a red barn surrounded by bales of hay. And he didn't mention any candidates, by the way, on the Republican side of things by name. He just prefaced some of the remarks he was saying, like, I know it's not election season yet, and then went on and on about not compromising and all that sort of stuff. The president is traveling in a bus that's got tinted windows and flashing lights, and, of course, the Secret Service picked it up. It's a $1.1 million bus, and the president went to Iowa, he says, not because of what's happening with the straw poll, what happened over the weekend, but that it was a state that gave him a huge win over Hillary Clinton in the beginning of it all for him. I mean, Republicans have been all over Iowa. It is thick with Republicans at this point. And the thought was, oh, yeah, of course, he's being attacked. Take the bus to where the fight is. When everybody leaves, boom, there you are. And Jay Carney and others, who's a White House spokesperson, saying that's simply not true. That you can't go to those places, that he's going there, and that happened to be what he was doing. Just happened to be on the heels of the straw poll. I mean, hey, that's what you do. That's politics. You got to pick your moments and pick your places and where you feel like you need to be out there stumping. And I guess they felt they needed to be out there stumping. In Minnesota, he got an okay reception. You know, he got a pleasant reception. But the people in Minnesota are a very friendly lot. In Iowa, they were a little bit tougher. They were really drilling him on some key things that have happened, including the specific jobs plan. What was the job plan? Really, that's what they wanted to know in those question and answer sessions. All right, stay with us. Coming up on the flip side, what's happening in Indiana after that stage collapse at the state fair? Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Again, the Congressional Budget Office sounds the alarm. This time warns of Greek-style U.S. debt crises. You heard me right. The GAO is drawing a parallel between the U.S. economy, its debt, and the current Greek economic meltdown. With the debt-to-GDP chart climbing into unfamiliar territory, the growing budget deficit will rise to unsupportable levels. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. The Federal Debt and Risk of Financial Crises document the CBO has published is a must-read for every American. Covering the risk of continued deficit spending coupled with an aging population and the rising interest rates spell economic disaster. It's imperative that you get a copy of this document and study it for yourself. Call me today at 800-686-2237, and I'll send you a free copy. Again, call 800-686-2237 and ask for your copy of the CBO document. Once again, you need to read this government report. Call 800-686-2237.
Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Allie C. Why Allie C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Allie C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Allie C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Allie C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Allie C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Allie C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Allie C. For more information and to order Allie C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Allie C today.
America tonight, let's head out first before we go to a Roger Madden moment where he's talking about taxing the rich and all of the world screaming, well, parts of America anyway, screaming for that to happen, his thoughts on it. Before we do that, let's go to Jay in Tennessee. Hey, Jay.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I am so sick of the mainstream media and Barack Obama and they're, what they're trying to do right now. They're talking about they want compromise in Washington. People want compromise in Washington. I don't understand how they can sit there and say people want compromise. To me, compromise means business as usual.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't think people really get their hands or their minds around what $14 trillion deficit is. If you spent $1 million a day, every single day of the year, do you realize it would take 38,329 years to spend $14 trillion at $1 million a day?
That's crazy.
Isn't it? Oh, my goodness. I'm so fed up. I'm trying to run two small businesses, the one that I've been doing for 20 years that's subsidizing the other one that we're just starting out. And I'll tell you, it's hard. I'm still living paycheck to paycheck.
Jay, really you're not alone. You're not alone. You know that so many people, brother, are living that way. It's crazy. That's what I say all the time. It's so true. You're right.
And what they don't understand is with...
Oops, I think we lost Jay.
So Socialists are correct that the rich have a greater obligation to the state than either that of the middle class or the poor. But they are wrong in concluding that that obligation is reduced only to greater taxation. This is Roger Madden, and this is what I think. Is it not becoming obvious to the rich in America that the current American system of government, by which it spends more than the revenue it receives, has resulted in insolvency and will ultimately lead to bankruptcy? Of course they have. And if that is true, why have they hunkered down, ignoring the signals of disaster, and have in effect remained silent while the rent seekers, unions, grant applicants, corporate welfare enthusiasts, and the raft of parasites who demand government largesse for every inane project that can be conceived continue unabated while the ship of state is sinking? Do they believe that they will survive the certain rebellion by the poor and the middle class? Are they not looking across the Atlantic and observing the future and knowing that not only can it happen here, in time it most certainly will, but unlike the United Kingdom, Americans own guns, and in large numbers. And if such a rebellion were to happen here, the British variety would look like a walk in the park. All of America's past rebellions were led by its wealthy. They, more than any other economic group, understood the nature of our country and its people. They were in the forefront of the Civil War, on the battlefield, in our financial institutions, and they ran our factories. They were the leaders in World War II, and their sons fought bravely in that war. Today, they hide while the poor grow restless. This is Roger Madden, and that's what I think.
All right, Roger Madden there talking about what I mentioned, the outcry about the wealthy and taxing the wealthy. And I think we lost Jay in Tennessee. He was trying to make some points and talking about what so many of us just wrestle with, the idea of how can you make, you know, here's the thing, how can you make it in America? How does the average family make it in America with the rising cost, and it seems like every time you turn around, it's just not there for you, meaning the taxes are going up in your backyard, the stuff at school is going up if you have kids, certainly food is at its all-time worst when you're going to the grocery store. I don't know how people with large families do it, because for two people in my world, I see how tough it is. I mean, I see how tough it is when you start to get, you know, meat and chicken and all that stuff, unless you're eating, you know, frozen food that's on sale. But even then, if you had a big family, and, you know, some people think you're crazy. They say, well, how come we used to do it in the old days? We used to stretch it because everything didn't cost as much. So the frustration level is very, very high out there. And you could hear that in Jay's voice, and you hear that in so many people that call America tonight. People who were doing okay. You know, in this, you think back to the 70s and what it took to live in the 70s, how much money when you had a family, and the fact that you could probably still raise children and get them to college and at least give them a chance where you could pay for some of the college, or if they had a scholarship, of course, that's always the case. But now things are so unaffordable for so many people. And what happens with these kids, by the way, who get out of college? We're going to talk about that on Wednesday. A lawyer is going to join us to talk about law school and how, and I know that jokes of lawyers abound, but think about somebody who's a bright legal mind and maybe they're, you know, maybe they're idealistic and they want to go to law school, but now the amount of money to go to law school and then coming out and not really finding the jobs. There's not a lot of jobs, but it's not just in that industry. It's in some other industries as well. However, when you look at the investment and what you have to pay in to take that next level, just like medical school, you talk about what's happened now in healthcare, chasing away a lot of good future doctors who, no way do they want to make that investment in being a physician where they're not a specialized surgeon for fear that they won't be able to recoup the money they would need to run a practice between the malpractice, you know, insurance that they have to pay and everything else that goes into just that basic practice. I think you're going to find it tougher to fill those spots, to put those doctors in those spots versus the other positions for physicians where they know they can make a crack at the kind of living they want to pay back the loans, number one, if they fell into that category. it's that rough out there. And then, by the way, for the everyday guy who could work for the railroad, who could be a trucker, who could do a myriad of other jobs that paid pretty well, sometimes much better than the college boys were making, they find themselves in the same position as the jobs are getting whittled down. And, you know, it's, we don't just want this to turn into one big wine session, but you can feel that frustration. That's why you're going to see a lot of politicians that are going to be shocked at the turnover. I know we said this in November, and November there was a big switch, and there were a lot of people that were elected by the so-called push of the Tea Party. I think you're going to find a similar thing. I think you're going to find that some longtime politicians will get challenged and may just barely hang on again to their jobs because the frustration level is so high. And Jay has a point. What compromise are we talking about? There is no the art of compromise is dead and doesn't work in D.C. It's what always gets kicked out there, and it doesn't happen. It doesn't change anything. There is no buzz in our backyard. What are people talking about in the backyard? They're talking about that something has to give. And somehow there is a definite disconnect between the constituents, the backyard, and the people who are elected to represent us in Washington. I always say this. It's a government of we the people. I mean, it's our government. And we forget that. We are the people. So if the people are not happy, the people have to pick up the phones and have to complain. You have to call Congress folks. You got to call senators. If you lean on them, if you express that frustration, maybe a different course will be taken because the people who are there do not want to get booted out of their jobs. You're going to pay attention to the people who yell the loudest or who complain the loudest, I should say. And that's what you need to do, the squeaky wheel and all of that. Coming up, as promised, boy, this is a good one. I hope if you're just a little bit tired, perk up, drink some Red Bull. You got to hear Don Morrow. He's just absolutely terrific and has some interesting, really a lot of interesting things to say. That's coming up around the bend here on ATN.
Why is it so many people suffer from so many illnesses today? Why don't doctors know how to help you? Could it be that our doctors don't know how because there's a nutrition solution and they only know about drugs? Over 68 diseases are known to be connected to a deficiency of glutathione. The missing ingredient to increasing your body's production of glutathione is cysteine. Raising your glutathione production protects you from cancer, heart disease, Parkinson's, macular degeneration, lung disease, digestive diseases, diabetes, Alzheimer's, ALS, rheumatoid arthritis, and lupus. Nature's richest source of cysteine is unheated whey. Heating can damage much of the cysteine. One World Whey is the first undamaged whey protein powder on the market. Using One World Whey may support optimal glutathione production unlike any other food or supplement you've ever taken. Call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325. Or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
The food storage industry leader has done it again.
Introducing FDG Clubs and Survival Bucks from the Freeze Dry Guy. For over 39 years, the Freeze Dry Guy has served various government agencies and the private sector with the finest in storable foods and emergency rations. If you've wanted to build emergency food supplies but couldn't afford it,
now you can.
Go to freezedryguy.com, click on products, and look for the Freeze Dry Guy Clubs to pay as you go.
Now you can build food storage without going into debt.
Choose from a payment range of $95 to $450 per month. month.
Our clubs work with everyone's budget.
Plus, when you join Freeze Dry Guy clubs, you'll get additional rewards. For example, this month, get 10% back in survival bucks on all purchases in the Freeze Dry Guy product line, plus free shipping within the lower 48 states on any order amount. Hurry. Go to freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. That's freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-3663. The Freeze Dry Guy. The best you can buy.
What would you do with a check for $25,000? What if you could eliminate all of your credit card debt in 90 days and keep all of your money? Hi, I'm Jason Davenport, and I've just completed ZeroDebt100.com, a program that stops and prevents debt collections of all kinds, including debt collectors and foreclosures, with guaranteed results. Forget loan modification. Zero Debt showed me how to get the banks to pay my property taxes and insurance while stopping my foreclosure without paying one dime. An attorney tried to garnish my wages, but the court denied his request because of what I found from the Zero Debt program. Find out how I did this by calling Zero Debt today at 800-477-9256. Tell them Jason sent you and ask for the Zero Debt special and the free bonus promotion about stopping an IRS levy and getting your money back. Tell them Jason sent you and call 800-477-9256. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256 or visit www.zerodebt100.com.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver, that's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338. UtopiaSilver.com, taking back America's healthcare one American at a time.
America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, coast to coast and all those nooks and crannies in between. I am so thrilled to welcome this man to our show. He is the golden throat. I mean, this man's voice has been on everything. Plus, he was an actor, too. You might remember Don Morrow as the Shell Answer Man. You remember the Shell Answer Man, the free booklets, all that stuff? Okay, but that's nothing. He's done a ton of other things. He even was the guy doing the commercials for the Titanic. Remember James Cameron's huge hit, the Titanic? Remember the booming voices on the commercials? That would be Mr. Morrow as well. Plus, he's done all kinds of narration on A&E, Biography Channel. I watch that one a lot. You know, I'm a huge history fan, the History Channel, PBS. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on. The list is so long. So, and plus, besides that, he also co-authored The Forsaken Heroes of the Pacific War, dynamite book about a 106-year-old World War II vet who sadly, Doc Brown, although what a long life, died just today. So how apropos that this is when we get to, a chance to speak to Don Morrow. Don, we are again humbled by your presence on America Tonight. Thanks so much for joining us on the show.
I'm overwhelmed.
That's sweet of you to say that.
No, it's very sweet of you to say all those things that I've tried to forget about. No, I'm kidding because they were all wonderful jobs. Titanic was a wonderful job, and God knows the Shell Answer Man, which was one of the great jobs of all time. 7 years on that one.
Yeah.
Actually, I worked for Cameron that long on Titanic because there were so many ancillary things that went on with that even after it came out, you know? So that was a hell of a good job, too.
Yeah, no kidding. Tell us, I mentioned Doc Brown. Tell us about Doc Brown and what kind of a man he was. What was he like? Your friendship really spanned for a while with him. And like I said, that book was tremendous. It really laid everything out for anybody who read it. And you can still, of course, get it today. But tell us about what was so special about this guy.
Okay, well, Doc Brown, first of all, up until yesterday morning, was the oldest living survivor of the Bataan Death March. And he was also the oldest living veteran of World War II. But he succumbed yesterday morning at 10:20 a.m. He was 2 months and 10 days shy of 106. He was a fabulous guy. I met him originally at the Hollywood Y out in Los Angeles. And we became friends. There was a funny way we met. They were looking for a couple of old guys to shoot some baskets for the Today Show. They were doing a special on seniors, you know. And so they picked me and they picked Doc. And when they dragged me into the basketball court, he was standing in the middle of the court popping them in from mid-court. I'd never seen anything like that, you know. And this guy, he was 81 at the time. I was only 60 then. And I was just amazed at this guy. Well, as the years went on, I got to know him better. He played a hard game of handball, where most everybody else by then was playing racquetball. He was playing handball, which I used to play, too, at the New York City Y up on 63rd Street. And handball is a much tougher game, really, than racquetball, I should say. And Doc still could, at the age of 95, he still beat everybody around there. I mean, it was amazing. And then at 95, he got pneumonia. And so his daughter took him to her B&B in Pinckneyville, Illinois. That's about 70 miles southeast of St. Louis, and that's where he had been up till this past year when she put him in the nursing home, which he didn't mind at all because there were a lot of ladies in the nursing home, and Brownie always liked the ladies. So he was a pilot before the war. He owned an airline out in Iowa, and then he learned to fly after he bought the airline, little airline, you know, a couple of planes. And he was a dentist. He had been an incredible athlete as a kid. High school and college, he was four-letter band in each. And he was the captain of the Creighton University basketball team as well, which was very famous. And he put a team together afterwards that beat the Harlem Globetrotters, the most famous basketball team of all time. Anyway, he was a fabulous guy, and being ROTC, he got called into the Army in 1937, and he was already 32 years old with a family with three kids, but you know, if you're ROTC, they call you, you go, that's it,
and
he's in.
Yeah.
And he was in the Philippines by midsummer of 1941, before the war hit, and they were having a pretty good time over there in the Philippines. A lot of these guys had brought their families over. He was thinking of bringing his family over, even though the specter of the rising sun was coming up very hard and fast at the time. Well, America was as far as the troops in the Philippines went, were so under-equipped, it was pathetic. And when the Japanese invaded, they just had literally nothing to resist with. Their weaponry was World War One. Their equipment was World War One. Their uniforms, their helmets were all World War One. So they weren't in very good shape to fight. And then, of course, they thought they were going to be the aggressors, and the Japanese just overwhelmed them, and they had to retreat down the Bataan Peninsula. And then they were surrendered in April of 42, and they were all, 90% of them were already dying of starvation then.
Yeah. And did he tell you how rough that was on that Bataan death march, what that must have been like?
Well, he did, yes. In our book, that's been dealt with so much by far better writers than I that we just use his words in the book. And it's not that he underplays, but he didn't overplay it either. But certainly you would get the idea from the book that it was the most horrific thing that ever happened in any of our wars. Probably the most horrific thing that happened in any war of anyone's lifetime, as far as that goes. America had put artesian wells along that route. All the way, every mile, they were not allowed to have one drink from those wells on the entire march. And every now and then some guy would break from the crowd and try to get a drink, and they just got beheaded, or they got stabbed, or they got shot. One of the three. So they lost about 40% of the guys on that march.
Yeah. I've seen other things. I was thinking maybe Sunday morning, the CBS morning show did a thing on Doc, and just incredible. It was incredible that he, as you said, as you were describing when you first met him, how athletic he was and how you'd never know. It was unbelievable with squash, etc. He was like an ageless guy, wasn't he, until the very, very end?
He was. In fact, Kevin, my co-author, and I took him to the, 4 years ago, that would have been in 2007, we took him to the annual get-together of the Battling Bastards of Bataan, Corregidor, and Mindanao, and he was declared there as the oldest survivor of it, you know.
Yeah.
And these guys were fabulous. We talked to so many of these guys. They were mostly in their 90s. There were some in their 80s, and there was nobody there over 100 except Doc. But these guys were the healthiest looking guys you ever saw. Now there's only about 400 of them left now.
But
they had such great senses of humor, and they were so proud of their military past. See, these guys had been told at the end of the war, do not talk about their internment. Do never talk about it. They were ordered that. And so for years they kept it contained. But most of them couldn't stand to even sleep in their beds when they got home. They couldn't eat the food. They had been so abused and constricted during those 3.5 years in the camps, that they couldn't normalize again after the war. But the ones that have survived it and that are still coming to those annual conventions are fabulous, fabulous guys. Unbelievable.
Yeah. We're speaking with, of course, legendary Don Morrow. In fact, Don, can you hang on through with us for a little tiny break, and we're going to come right back?
My pleasure.
All right, voiceover king Don Morrow. We're going to be back with more here on ATN.
Congratulations to our friends at eFoodsDirect.com. In August, they celebrate 30 years in the long-term storable food business. To celebrate, eFoodsDirect.com is offering the lowest price ever on their one-year Freedom Food Supply, even less than the price in 1981. For a limited time, you get 30% off a one-year Freedom Supply. which provides three hearty meals per day for one adult. The Freedom Supply includes a large variety of fruits and vegetables, dairy, legumes, grains, sprouting seeds, and more. Plus, you get a generous supply of their quick-fix meals. This is the most complete, extensive, and affordable unit they have ever offered. Call 800-409-5633 or go to efoodsdirect.com/Alex and get 30% off a one-year food supply. If you have ever considered getting a supply, now is the time. Call 800-409-5633. That's 800-409-5633 or efoodsdirect.com/Alex.
Are you tired of spending money for metal canning lids year after year? Then stop. Stop buying metal lids and get Tatler reusable canning lids. Made of USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, Tatler canning lids let you safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways that contain BPA. But Tatler canning lids are indefinitely reusable and guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning and contain no BPA. Tatler lids are dishwasher safe, perfect for standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders by phone at 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's 1-877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com. Tatler Reusable Canning Lids, the original since 1976.
Heart and Body Extract continues to receive positive testimonials from people who have experienced amazing results, like Reed.
I just wanted to send you a quick but a very big thank you for Heart and Body Extract. I've been on the formula for nearly a month now, and the improvement in the circulation of my legs has been simply amazing.
Reed was facing a tough choice.
I was facing surgery due to the severity of the 100% blocked arteries in both my legs. And my decision, waiting for surgery, to say no and try Heart and Body Extract instead has been thankfully the right decision.
And the result?
I can now walk up steps without noticeable pain.
Order Heart and Body Extract at 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305. Or hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract for a long and healthy life.
We're back with Don Moore on, of course, talking and reminiscing about really just a terrific guy in Doc Brown and what, you know, what he meant. And what he was like physically, and the fact that he was the oldest survivor. You think of the Bataan Death March, and Don did such a great job in describing what that was like. And many of us, who are too young to remember, but had it in history class, have seen it come alive through various films that have been made, including the more recent one that Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg did. Did you catch that, Don? Did you see the Hanks Spielberg?
I did see that. Frankly, didn't think that much of it because it was just a repetition of battle scenes that we've seen over and over again, you know?
Yeah.
If people are really interested in the Bataan Death March, there's a couple of books they should really read besides this one, which only takes about 2 hours to read. Mm-hmm. But Laura Hillenbrand, who wrote Seabiscuit.
Yeah.
She wrote a book called Unbroken. Laura goes into what happens to these people very, very deeply. I mean, it's brutal beyond belief. A lot of people wouldn't be able to read it because of that, because they, you know, talk about something that really is gory. And she wrote about a particular guy also, a real life character named, Louis Zamperini. He was an Olympic runner. He ran at the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, in fact. And the Japanese knew that when they captured him, and they brutalized him for that reason. They made him run races after they'd beaten him up. And I mean, her story about this guy is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, I've heard that. That's a recent book.
Tears in the Darkness by Michael and Elizabeth Norman. And that's about a guy named Ben Steele, who is a professor out in Montana, an art professor, and he's 96. And he's still going strong. There's something about these guys that survived it. They are stronger than the average person and live longer. It may have been that diet. I don't know. I mean, you know, they were starved to death, these guys.
Sure. As you said, 3.5 years. And that's, you know, her title of her book says it all, Unbroken, just crazy. And that's a fair, as I was saying, that's a fairly new book, too. And that's a good one to recommend. I'm glad that you did that.
Both of those are fabulous books.
Yeah.
I mean, they really go into the death march. And
you get a better sense. Mm-hmm.
We don't go into the brutalization that deeply. There's a lot of light moments in our book because Doc had a great sense of humor.
Don, we would be remiss not to ask you about your career. As I said, you are a voiceover king, and you still are working. What did you think when you first got into the business that it would lead to all the things that it led to for you?
I had no idea where it would lead, but what I did know from the very first day was how much I loved it. And I teach, and I tell my students or potential students, if you don't absolutely love this more than anything, then don't waste your money on it. Don't bother, because there's a lot of, you know, as you well know,
sure,
as anybody in this business knows, there's a lot of resistance to getting that first job. And it's just like there's a lot of resistance to putting out your first book.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
Maybe if you're a brain surgeon, maybe there's a lot of resistance to the first brain surgery. I don't want the guy who's never operated on anybody doing me, I'll tell you that.
I would agree with you, absolutely. You know, as your career went on and spanned all kinds of different things, one of the things is you became a Cronkite's, I can barely say it, Uncle Walter's announcer on the Sunday news special. I met him one time and he was very gracious, and this was many years ago, but you worked with him, so to speak. What was he like?
Walter was just one of the greatest guys you could ever want to meet. And it's interesting that I never knew Walter's politics until 50 years later. And Walter, Brit Hume was remarking about Walter recently on the air and saying that nobody in the industry knew what Walter's politics were, because Walter was from the old school of journalism where you reported the story. You didn't try to slant it. So I spent a lot of time with Walter. We closed up Good Shores in New York every Sunday night, or really Monday morning. And we talked about everything in the world, I thought, but I guess we never really got into politics. Funny.
Yeah, how interesting. Another interesting person that you worked with, and you must have known a little bit, was Jackie Gleason. I still can look at his old clips and laugh out loud. Was he that funny off the air?
Well, other than seeing Gleason in Good Shores every Sunday, I did the last show that he, the last series of shows, that he did in New York. And you don't go up and meet Jackie Gleason. You don't get friendly with Jackie Gleason. I would not even assume to. But when he brings you out on the stage, he acts as if you're his best friend, which, of course, is for an announcer, that's a marvelous thing to get a great intro, you know, as you can imagine. And at least to the audience, it looks like you're his best friend for a minute anyway. But I didn't get to know Jackie Gleason per se, other than that initial handshake, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's as close as I got to Jackie.
Yeah. You go from things like that where you're doing the announcing to you also had hosting jobs at a couple of different networks where you were doing game shows. You were hosting game shows.
Yeah, I did some game shows. The first one was called Camouflage at ABC. And then I did one for Merv Griffin at NBC called Let's Play Post Office. And then I had something that was actually kind of worthwhile in an ABC show called Science All-Stars, which was not a game show, where we took the science winners, the National Science Fair winners, and we would put them on. If somebody was in rocketry, we would have Werner von Braun as the adult guest, so to speak. And I would interview these people. And I mean, my ability to read off the teleprompter was pretty good by then, so it looked like I knew what I was talking about, even if I didn't. But I thought that show was you know, really something worthwhile. That was on for a couple of years on ABC.
Yeah. What was your...
And I had one out of Dallas that I really loved doing with Dizzy Dean, a syndicated radio show just like yours.
Yeah.
And that was 1950.
Mm. And Dizzy Dean and you became pretty good friends, I would imagine, because didn't he take you to New York? Didn't he tell you to come to New York?
Yeah, that's how I got to New York. Dizzy got me to quit my job down there in Dallas at WFAA and move to New York. And I'd saved up during the couple of years $500. And in 2 weeks, I blew it in New York.
But that was pretty easy.
Dizzy bought a drink, I bought a drink. And we were hanging out with a Yankee ball club up there in the Bronx at the Grand Concourse Hotel. And I got to meet everybody on the Yankee ball club. And it was a great thrill, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I was with him for, 2 or 3 months before the job that Dizzy thought he had for me fell through. But then he got me another one with McClendon Station down there, KLIF and
sure.
Oak Cliff.
Sure.
I don't know if that's who owns it now, but anyway, Gordon McClendon was called the Old Scotchman, and he had a network of stations across the country. So Dizzy got me a job with Gordon, and I was there for another year before I started to work with the networks and so forth.
Yeah. We don't have a lot of time left, but I got to ask you this question. Who was, of all the famous people that you've worked with, that you've met, who was your favorite? Who's your favorite, Don?
Who's my favorite? Well, somebody, I guess my favorite hang-around pal was a guy I met there in Dallas in 1949 on WFAA when Margot Jones Theater was Theater 49. Is what it would have been called then. His name was Jack Warden, and he had not yet done his first movie. But then he came to New York after, and he was on Broadway, and then he got into films and did films and series and so forth. And I was with Jack right up until his death about 4 or 5 years ago. We spent a lot of time with each other on both coasts.
Yeah, and he, of course, famous, I'm trying to think, people would know, what, Dragnet?
No, he was with NYPD, the original one in New York.
Oh, yeah.
But he did a lot of, then he was Jigsaw John, and he had a bunch of series, you know.
Yeah.
Played a lot of cops and detectives and so forth through the years.
Yeah, I remember that. What a pleasure. Voice over guru, Don Morrow, thanks so much for hanging with us here on America Tonight.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Katie.
Thanks, Don.